Check.
Okay. Recording's running. We're starting the work session at 5:35, September 7th. We're going to zip right down through the work session items. Our engineer is here to answer technical questions, and then he will be leaving us. So let's get Al over here to talk about, I guess, all this stuff, basically, except the personnel policies.
So we've had a couple speed requests. We got one on West Genesee Road from the end of the village line to the 690 on-ramp. As you recall, we already did one speed study request, and we asked him to look at from Irene Drive to Dunham Road. We got another speed study request for between the village line and the 690 ramp. It goes from, when you're leaving the village, it goes from 30 right to 50 miles an hour. Now that stretch, there's not a ton of houses there where it's 50 miles an hour. There's only two houses, and then Indian Springs Manufacturing, and then the power line crossing. I mean, it doesn't hurt to ask. I don't know if that one would be...
Or it's just an accident out there.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you here for that? Great.
I am the ninth house after.
Yep. I counted as I was going down, Joe.
I'm the ninth one, and there are four or five paths there, so there's probably over a dozen houses.
And I'm sorry, just for the record, your name?
Deborah Brimshaw.
Okay.
Do you want a chair?
No, I'm good. And I've never been to a meeting, so
it's all right.
And the reason I'm requesting this is that we moved here a few years ago, and it's icy in the winter. And everybody, and I'm probably as guilty as everybody else, they want to go from 30 to 50 right away. And there's no, it's a narrow road, and there's not room to turn into your driveway. And I had a semi push me off into a snowbank in my driveway a year and a half ago. And then we had a truck, and this is this year, about 2 months ago, I was parked from 690 trying to turn across the lane. And there was traffic, including buses, that just went on forever. And I couldn't. I had to stop. And there's no room to go around me. And the ditches are, they're deep.
Yep.
And there was a car behind me that stopped. And I looked up, and there was a truck. And he didn't notice that we were stopped. And I was waiting for the impact. I had my son in the car. And he hit the ditch. And when it cleared, I don't know how he got it. Somebody pulled him out, and he limped down the road. But I have pictures from what just happened Sunday.
No, I like I was just saying to these guys, it doesn't hurt to ask. I don't know if it'll be accepted. We don't have control of it, especially since it's a state road. Ultimately, all speed limits are set by the New York State DOT. And that was the next thing I was going to for that, is we should, you know, it doesn't hurt to ask. We already asked for one west of there because we have... Quite honestly, the most recent traffic study data that we've seen, the median speed the median speed is 63 miles an hour on 370 right now.
Yeah.
Which is fast.
On the east side of town or the
on
west?
The east side of town, I don't think you're going to see much different on the west side of town.
No, they go fast.
I mean, people are coming 65 miles an hour down 370, and that's what it amounts to. Mm-hmm. Now, like I said, whether or not the DOT approves it, my past experience has been that they're hesitant on reducing speeds on the state roads, but it doesn't hurt to ask.
You were going to refer to the motorcycle accident that was there?
Yep, that's where Joe was going, and do I know if it'll get approved? I don't. Typically, these speed studies take anywhere from 3 to 6 months. They only do them when school's in session because they like
But they do take incidents and accidents
they
into
do.
Account.
And
they
do.
And we had one that just hit, and you've got to see the pictures. They hit the ditch, and it's like 90 feet on the neighbor's property, went off, hit, and then hit where our accesses to the river,
mm-hmm.
hit it and pushed the dirt, and I'm not even sure that's secure anymore where we can pull in a park, took air, hit, and bounced and did another like 120 feet and then drove back through the ditch and left a tire on the road at 5 a.m. on Sunday. And I can show you, I mean, literally a video of the property, and this is our property, and it's 5 a.m, but I mean, there's huge gouges in our property, and that's where the car I mean, and that's not the video, but I would just like to, I'm sorry, just kind of run around. This, like I said, they're hitting way over here, and this is where, like, you would park a car.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went over here to hit, and they kept going. And then we have a shed that they, if I could, I don't know who should look at the picture, but they almost hit the shed. And that's what I'm saying, is that we have kids. I have grandkids. And it's like, you know, right here's the video of, this is the whole, and I don't know who can be here. Yeah, there we go. But that was Sunday morning, and that's where my car is parked now. And then over here, and it went all the way to where my husband is, and then they drove back off the property. They had to be traveling, like you said, at more than 63.
I mean, that's...
If anyone else wants to see it.
You know, part of that is, I know you said 360 is, or 370 is a narrow road, but it does have 4-foot shoulders. People get that sense of security because they have the shoulders and the 14-foot travel lane on the state roads, and they tend to go faster than the posted speed limit. I mean, that's...
If I can say something, I'm Bob Gerasi, and you know, it doesn't hurt this board to ask for a speed study. And as Al mentioned, it's basically a New York State decision. But you know what I'm hearing is, correct me if I'm wrong, guys. There's nothing that would preclude you and other residents from talking directly to your state representatives as well as state DOT. Let them know what you feel. I mean, all we can do as a protocol thing is put the request into the state. We have as much power as you.
So get the neighbors together.
Well,
and
I'm
talk
just saying.
To the DOT.
I'm not telling you to do that. I'm saying I don't think.
Well, I really want the speed lowered.
Yeah.
I don't feel safe on my own.
Yeah. So
it
wouldn't hurt to advocate for it.
Yeah.
I mean, this board is not going to fight that request.
Yeah.
I mean, it's.
These,
I grew up on 370.
These two incidents of me almost getting hit. I mean, and then this happening in our yard. I mean, that's like 2 months apart. And
yeah.
I mean, it's just...
But I just want you to... Do you understand the protocol?
You can put in the request, but that doesn't mean they're going to look at it.
I'm sure I can speak for everybody here. We're in sympathy and empathy with what you're sensing, what you're going through there. And to ask us for a... And the protocol, it's just the protocol, that the only folks who can ask for a speed study is the local municipality. So we'll do... I'm assuming we're going to do that.
Okay.
But don't stop there.
Okay.
You know, you've got people representing you in Albany, and you've got an agency that has to make this decision. You should let them know.
All right.
What, from your heart, what you're sensing and what you're feeling.
Okay. Senator DeFrancisco is a great advocate.
And that might not get you anywhere, but at least you'll go on record as having said something.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
Along with this speed study, can we just make a request to troopers and sheriffs? Patrol that.
I was going to say we can actually attach amendments to our request for the speed study, including letters from residents and stuff like that. So if she wants to have a petition or any letters, we can have the town clerk attach that stuff to the speed study request.
Okay. When will that go in?
Well, we'll probably make a motion tonight.
This evening.
And approve it, and then so as soon as you can get that into us, we'll just include that with the request.
Okay.
Your other elected official that you're going to want on the state level is Will Barkley.
Okay.
He's your state representative, and Senator DeFrancisco is your state senator. Okay.
Thank you.
Careful out there.
We got another speed study request on River Road, just north between West Phoenix and Greenleaf Drive.
We have a gentleman here.
North.
Can I address that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. My name's Bill Chambers. I've been a resident for 34 years on Cameron-Dale Road. And I'm here to talk about the speed study that I think would be important, and I appreciate the advice of what you just said, Bob, but from the Five Corners, from the fire station on River Road to Route 31. As we all know, that area, it used to be higher, but that road was not made as a thoroughfare. 370 was, that road was not. It continues to have more and more traffic as the Y was built and then the development of timber banks. But the Y redesign is the problem. And I encourage all of you to go out there and see what I'm referring to. The jut out, the turn-in lane coming north, or coming south, the turn-in lane caused the road going north to jut out and then jut back in. The jut back in is the issue. That's the issue.
Where it narrows again.
It narrows again, and it's If you look at the jut in on any other road, including 370 at the bypass, or any other road coming down the bypass, the space is, there's much more space, many more yards between where it starts to jut in and where it does jut in. So it's a very sharp angle. And that's right at that angle is where Lucas was hit and killed. And I saw it. I saw it happen. I was 150 yards behind him. So this is personal to me. And I think it should be personal to all of you. Mm-hmm. For the safety of the drivers coming south in the wintertime, someone steps on the brakes at the stoplight, they're going to slide right into the oncoming traffic. For bikers who ride on two-foot shoulders, until I called the county, that road, the grass hadn't been cut all summer. It was chest high. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
I questioned it when the county DOT approved the plans. Yeah. That was what the county requested.
And there could be a lot of reasons why the 12th hole is there. Maybe they didn't want to go there. I was shocked they put it down the hill versus coming up the hill, the extra widening. But there's power lines and a ditch, and mm-hmm. they might have taken the least cost option. So I will do what you suggest.
I think that we should make the same request.
But I think that goes beyond. I think what he's talking about, it goes. We'll the speed study we can consider, but Joe, you're talking about the construction of the road, the width of the road.
There's a serious issue, and if you look at the plans for Timberbanks, it's going to be. You know, they've already started clearing land. You guys know all that behind the Y. That's going to be the road. That's the entrance. It's. I don't know if it's going to become a public road or.
No, it is.
It is a public road. Yeah. So that's the, you know, those lots, 22, 24, are being developed right now. I view what's there, hopefully, as a temporary solution. You know, the jut in. People are smarter than me. Engineers can figure out what would be best for long-term needs of this community.
Should we try to schedule a meeting with County DOT? To just get another look at it?
We could. I don't know how much alignment change the county DOT would do at this time. I think we'd be, it doesn't hurt to ask. With that being said, it doesn't hurt to ask, especially since there was a face fatality there. That we just requested a speed study on that. Jeez, do you remember, Bob? I think it was 2.5 years ago on that section.
Before the Y opened.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
really apples and oranges.
Yeah, it was before the Y opened. So the Y's been there 3 years now.
16,000 members of the Y. I mm-hmm. think you all know that. 16,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big number. You know, at 6 in the morning, that parking lot's filled.
Mm-hmm.
And it stays that way throughout. It goes down in the middle of the day and then fills up again in the evening. Just for a point of information, I went online and looked at speed distance time calculator. 1.4 miles from the firehouse to 31 at 40 miles an hour takes 2 minutes and 6 seconds. At 35 miles an hour takes 2 minutes and 24 seconds. And at I have it over. It's at 45 miles an hour is 1 minute and 52 seconds. So, you know, for 16 seconds, 14 seconds for 5 miles an hour, I think people could adjust their life for 14 seconds to save a life. So thank you.
Don't disagree. Yeah.
No, thanks.
I was actually talking about another section of River Road, but thank you for coming in.
And, yeah.
But it's River Road.
I talked to Dina. I came in and talked to her August 23rd. I sent her an email requesting me on tonight. But yeah.
Well,
thank you.
It's just one more section of request.
And, yeah.
Well, and you know, I think what this suggests or implies,
thanks for coming
our
in.
Our community has changed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just changed. It's not the same community that it was 20 years ago. There's more people that live here. There's more things going on, in this case, the Y. And it's a legitimate thing to go back and examine.
I'll send a letter.
All right. Hey, thank you so much.
So,
just one more comment I forgot to make. When you do look, to your point, when you look at River Road from 370 to the Five Corners, it's 40 miles an hour. And then it goes 45. And then you go further, you know, Radisson is 45, then it goes to 50. There's a sign, I mean, the inconsistencies are incredible. There's a sign up on Radisson coming south on Radisson where it's 45 miles an hour, and there's a curb sign about a quarter mile from the stoplight that says, go 45. Well, 45 is the maximum speed limit.
Yeah.
So it's just outdated, to your point.
I agree, Bob, but, you know, that whole road. And when Al came in,
Norski, yeah.
And I think you guys came in at the same time to express concerns on River Road. I mean, I think the whole road needs to be looked at, because he's talking about people coming down from Oswego, coming to their homes from Oswego and using that as a cut through. You know, the Y is a huge factor. We've got development. We've had development on River Road, and I don't know as if the speed is kept up with the development. I know there we do analysis. We
I
do
think
an analysis.
Nationwide speeds have increased. That's bottom line. Our driving patterns have changed and habits have changed. And nationwide, we've seen median speeds creeping up.
So here's the thing, though. Here's the, I mean, So you do a speed study and we bring speeds down. It's still enforcement, and that is actually a factor in a consideration of reduction of speed. Of if there are long stretches of road where people actually can speed, that's a factor in whether or not they lower the speed.
Can I speak to
you? Sure.
One of the other. My next avenue, if it's unsuccessful, is to work with the Y to request a school speed zone. As a licensed childcare facility, 1,320 feet qualifies, as long as children are crossing. And I watch on a regular basis people come from the apartments
yep.
in Radisson, and I think you know the apartments.
Yeah, River Knoll. River Knoll.
Over, yeah, who walk, ride bikes. From there to the Y, and so so that's another option that I'm going to pursue. Lisa, she has to support it, but I think she would, as being a school speed zone. I have no idea what that takes to be approved, but anything to lower the speeds as a first step, and then
we could actually, you know what? I think in the speed study, you can, as I recall, in that there's a form that Dina fills out. I thought there was a school zone box there
for consideration.
So as I recall.
So are we going from the 5 points
to
West Phoenix?
We could. Yeah, we could say River Road from Patchett Road to West Bridge Street.
Do we want to do two separate speed studies, or do we want to lump them all into one?
Lump them all into one, and then we should do a letter to look at updating the signage in its entirety along that road.
So you're saying north of 370 to Phoenix is an issue as well?
Well, yeah, we've had several speed studies north of 370 to Patchett Road to the Five Corners there. We've requested speed studies there a couple times. We had the gentleman that put up his own traffic speed.
I didn't mean 370. I'm sorry. I meant 31. North of 31 to Phoenix?
I mean, we've got all those entrances. We've got, I can't believe the county DOT has let it do them, but Radisson Trails cross at mid-block intersections. Without signage, I mean, it's...
Well, you know, it's the right thing for us to do.
Right.
So we'll go from Patchett all the way to West Bridge Street, right?
Yeah.
So River Road from Patchett to...
Yeah, I think I mentioned it in another
West meeting. Bridge
you
Street.
Know, a model for me in my head is, for whatever it took to do it, Route 173 is 35 miles an hour. For the most part, you know, all the way down.
I think that's because of the non-standard curb geometry down there.
Okay, but there's some straightaways on that road.
There are, but there's a lot of curves that are non-standard geometry. That I'm sure that's a big part of that.
Sure.
What's the T in West Phoenix?
West Bridge Street.
West Bridge Street.
Oh. Hopefully, with some encouragement, the state will do the right thing.
Well, yeah, that's all county DOT on River Road. We can do the resolution. You know, for some reason it keeps sticking in the back of my mind. I don't know if towns can request speed studies on state roads or if we need to.
We've already done it.
What state road did we do?
370.
That's right, we did. 370 and.
Yeah, we can ask for whatever we want.
We can ask for whatever we want. They can always say no. They can always say no. I kind of remember in another municipality that I worked with at one point in time, it was on Route 5 in Vernon, as I recall. The state came back and said, you can't request speed studies on state roads, but yeah, it doesn't hurt to ask.
Well, at least we're on record as far as having a concern.
And that's a different reason for DOT as well.
So simple, keep it simple because it'll be a motion requesting a speed study along River Road from Patchett Road to West Bridge Street.
And Bill, are you going to send a petition with that, just so we don't send that forward if you're still going to get us more information?
Whatever. Well,
or at least a letter.
I'll send a letter, and then I will.
I'll go out and get some pictures of signs and stuff, too, that we can attach as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll show the inconsistency in signage as far as speed.
I mean, you know, my real concern is the new poorly designed new road. If you just look at that distance, at the distance from the
taper distance, yeah, the taper distance back
taper
is
distance,
short.
Yes,
it is
very short.
I had those concerns years ago. Same concerns.
You said you had those concerns, Al, when the county DOT approved that. Are those concerns in writing?
Yeah.
No, I think
it was during a meeting we had
with the county DOT. I thought it was an awful short taper.
Okay. So it's not on record anymore.
And I mean, I can go back through my meeting notes and see if I got something from it, but it just.
No, that's all right. I mean,
it's only 140 feet, 120 feet. It's not typically it would be 180 to 200 foot taper length for that. And that's just speaking out from memory from the Highway Design Manual, but I think at that speed it should be 180 or 200 foot taper length.
Okay, I've got it. We'll put that down as item G.
And then the West Genesee Street one will be from the village line, or from...
Hillary?
No, it's not. It's really from where, because it actually... From the 30 mile an hour change, the section of 50 mile an hour speed from.
That Connell's beyond Connell, right?
Yeah, from where it goes from 30 to 50 to the 690 ramp. I don't know how we would describe that.
690.
So from the end of the village speed limit to the 690 north ramp. From.
Or do you want to go to south, go beyond.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep, village speed limit.
Yeah, because the other request, we went west from Dunham Road, right?
We went east from Dunham Road to Irene. Dunham to Irene, we did. Emmerich, sorry, yeah.
So we don't want to leave out Emmerich to the north ramp of 690.
Yeah, so let's just go from the end of the village speed limit to Emmerich Road.
Yep.
All right, let me update my motion. I get a motion requesting a speed study along River Road from Patchett Road to West Bridge Street as well as on Route 370 from the village speed limit sign to Emmerich Road. Unless we get a mile marker, I think that's the best description we can get.
We can put the mile marker in the application.
Okay. Okay, good.
Town Parks Annexation. As you know, we just had some survey work completed at the Town Park. I had them actually flag the property corners of what we owned and had some topo done. What I didn't have them do was a boundary survey map of all the town parcels with a legal description. One of the requirements of the annexation checklist is a description of land to be annexed. So Steve Sainer, I asked Steve for a proposal for additional work. He came back with $1,920 to do the boundary description and or the boundary map and legal description.
And we have that budgeted.
We had money in the budget for park improvements, right, Tony?
Yes.
Yep. That we can use for that. So that's you know I just want
so
everybody
just a brief of the board.
Yeah, to that we're going to spend $1,920 on that.
We never got when we were gifted that land. We were never given a survey of that.
What we need is an actual legal description of all the
points.
Yeah. All
meets
the
meets and bounds.
We need a legal description, meets and bounds of the entire town holding that is going to get that we're going to move the village boundary around.
The petition itself is simple. I mean, it's only a couple of sentences. The reason being is the normal annexation petition, you have to list the people that are residing there. There's a whole process that you have to go through. Well, there's nobody residing there.
Geese.
So it's, you know, they
talk about that.
They normally have to sign the petition. Here, you guys are going to sign the petition. We submit it to the village, and between 20 and 40 days that we have to have a joint meeting where we both boards determine whether this is a good thing to do. And that's basically it. But the first, as Al said, the first requirement is description
that,
of land. That's going to
be that boundary survey and legal description.
Yeah.
Al, we're not affecting any homeowners.
No, now there's two homeowners that are between on Smoky Hollow Road between the park and the village. We can go talk to those homeowners if they're interested. In participating, we can offer them that opportunity.
To be annexed
to the village.
If we do that, we change the whole process changes, because now you got homeowners.
Doesn't the park land go all the way up to 48?
It does.
Nobody on 48.
Here's the thing. I would not. I mean, I'd certainly mention it to those homeowners. It's an opportunity in the future, and it's their choice. They don't have to,
right.
Because to consider that, I would guess that it would take some time for me as a resident to consider whether or not I would want to make that move for
they
the sake
get
of time.
To village taxes once they get
exactly.
Village taxes, but they get village services, including right. sewer, which is the big.
Right.
They
that's
have village
that's
water.
The big. That's the big. Yeah. And
not
you know,
public sewer now.
No, they're on septic.
I like what you just said, Joe. Make it, you know, let them know that we're moving in this direction, but for them, in the future, we can always consider
yeah.
this.
Yeah. To make it, it makes it easier mm-hmm. for them in the future.
What I like about this process is that it literally does not affect any residents or other homeowners. This is strictly the
it will not affect the nose villages.
No.
No.
We're not including that parcel in the. No, we're going right around it. That's why what the legal description will only be the town holdings.
It's a boundary move.
Yes.
That's all it is.
Do you mind if we skip to the West Tennessee Sewer District electric installation bids?
You know what? Let me just. No. Talk about.
Okay.
that's a no brainer. I mean, I just need you here for the technical questions that might arise from the other.
Building maintenance update. So I wanted to go over this. This is phase two of the office modifications here for the court clerk's office and
the grant
that we're pursuing through the office of the one of the state court offices. Court administration. There you go, Tony. I couldn't spit that out for some reason. This has changed slightly since you last saw it.
And have you sent this along to Judge Mantione?
I haven't, but I'll email it to him. I wanted to go over it with you guys first. So I apologize for yours not being a color guess. The big thing is we're going to extend the DIOS here to the just past the edge of the existing door. We're going to relocate that existing door that's on the backside of Karen's office and put it in the hallway here where the two column posts are for secure access with an access control fob to all the court offices. We're including an ADA ramp on this end of the Diaz, so we're ADA compliant for if he has witnesses that are coming up to the bench, we should have ADA compliance. The map room at the back will get split in half. One half will be a conference room office for DA nights. The other half will be a prisoner holding room. And it's just a wall and one new door.
You got an office for Bonnie up there?
Yeah, she's going into my office.
Okay.
The only thing that I don't think would be eligible for grant funding is we need to relocate the double doors that are outside of the entrance to the cafeteria area to the actual cafeteria. I don't believe that move would be eligible to be funded by the grant, but I believe everything on this portion of the building would be eligible for grant funding. So as part of the grant, we have to commit that the funds are available even if we don't get the grant to do the work, which they are.
How much was the proposal for this phase to do all this work?
We went from a bulletproof glass window to a regular court clerk's window. We should come in around $26,000. Between 26 and 30.
And you said that you haven't sent this to Judge Mantione yet. Did you send this to Judge Bryant?
Joe and I spoke with Judge Bryant a couple times. Judge Bryant said that we're free to do what we like. He is not opposed to changes, but he is not requesting any changes.
Okay.
So that's the... And one more access control fob at the double doors going down the hallway to what is now Tony's office in the codes department. The codes window obviously will stay. There's no changes there. If somebody comes in for codes, they can buzz them in through the double doors. That'll be access controlled if they need to actually enter the office.
And to just remind the board, the shift that... shift in personnel. The court clerks will move to this area behind that new glass window.
Yeah, where codes is now.
Codes will go to the clerk's area.
Court clerk's area, yep. And then all court traffic will enter through these doors.
This will be a dedicated court wing. Very, just like...
Other than the historian's office, but she's here one day a week.
Well, right, the town historian.
Yeah.
So what did you just say, that the court proceedings, they don't use this door now?
They do, but when people come in to pay a fine during the day...
Uh-huh. They come in the other...
Well, actually, it's always confusion because they came into court initially through these doors, so they think they can come in through these doors during the day.
And then they come to fob doors.
And then they...
Make it through.
Yeah, and they... Or they go knocking on office windows for somebody to let them in. And there's I feel there's adequate signage out there that just nobody reads them, and I don't know how to fix that.
So who sits in that court clerk office all day?
They're there till 2:00. There's two court clerks there.
But where they're located now, they're going to be moved here.
Yep.
Dan Picardo and
codes
enforcement are going to move to that area up front.
Yep.
Al is going to move from here
to Dan's office.
Al, you mentioned splitting one room into two. One will have prisoners and the other will have the DA.
Correct.
Talking to people. Is it going to be soundproofing between those two?
You
want prisoners overhearing with the DA.
We could certainly could certainly add that in.
What are these rooms that have nobody in them or they're not identified?
Karen's office stays
there.
So you see where the judge's office is. Karen actually occupies two offices. Her files are in one. Her office is next to it. So if we're moving from left to right, you see the judge's office label. The next two offices are Karen Rice. The one after that will be Tim Woolsey. And then Dan Picardo and the two deputy codes enforcement officers will be in the... what is labeled as codes office. That wall was taken out when they, it's still in the basement, but I'll remove it.
Yeah, so that wall?
That wall is not actually there.
It's not there, so it's a larger room.
So, and how are we paying for this? We have the money to do this?
What we would do is we have to pass a resolution saying that we'll go forward with it as part of the grant, and that the we'll support it. And we're hoping to get grant money to pay for it.
Yes. So if they
Except the door, the relocation of the door at the kitchen.
But if we don't get the grant, we're responsible for actually going through with the project, right?
I think they want to know that if the $30,000, we're going to request the max.
Yeah.
If the $30,000 isn't
awarded, or awarded, all of it isn't awarded,
we still have a.
Or if all of it isn't awarded, that will still go forward, basically. Okay. Still trying to get one more quote for my highway garage fascia. I'm having a hard time getting contractors to give me. I need a third quote because of our procurement policy. I need a third quote. I need one more. I've contacted some roofers. I actually just got a hold of one today that I believe will give me a quote. Roofers are all jammed up because of the weather we had earlier this year, and they're basically turning work away at this point in time. But I did get a hold of one today that I believe is going to give me a quote in the next couple days. If they give me a quote, we'll go ahead with that. Right now we've gotten one very good number that's well within our budget. We may actually, we'll have to review where we're at numbers-wise, but we may actually have money left in this year's budget to move forward with this if we wanted to. It really depends on, I really just got to crunch the numbers of where we're at.
One of the things that I think we need to address is the driveway going into the old highway garage on Elizabeth Street. There's some potholes. I don't know.
Yeah, what that, and we need to do a sewer lateral over there for those folks, but we need to close on the Mechanic Street parcel to be able to do that.
Now, what about sealing in the driveways in the parking lots?
I called Superior Seal again today, and they said we're getting close to the top of their list, so any day now. I anticipate them to roll in, and I told them to give me at least 24 hours notice so I can tell people to park. The employers, because they're going to do it in 2 days, so they'll do the front area 1 day, and then the public will have to come in this door that day, and then they'll do the employee, or this side of the building the next day.
Neil, on average, how long will it take for us to realize or figure out if we're going to get the grant or not for this project?
I believe they do the awards in December.
Okay.
I think that's
usually pretty good about the court stuff, because they give out money for if it's safety and, you know, protecting the prisoners and the public from the prisoners.
Well, and I don't know anything about this grant, but would it help us if we had both judges endorse the project?
I don't know how I'm not
put it out for them.
Well, I don't know. Would you have any experience with that?
I don't think it'll make a big difference. No. They do this routinely. I mean, all the towns request grants to put cameras and all that different stuff, and they're usually pretty good about it.
Okay. I don't know if we've ever gotten one of these court grants.
Have we ever applied?
We have. We got denied on the last one we applied for, and I think it was on a technicality more than anything, on the grant application. We didn't have, I can't remember what happened, something didn't get submitted with it, and that's why we got denied.
What was that for? How long ago?
That was 3 or 4 years ago. I think it was 4 years ago.
So this was applied for 3 years ago. Four years
ago. But it wasn't this. It was just an extension of the bench with an actual elevated bench down here and a witness box was what we asked for before.
They're big on separating the prisoners. That's important for the court administration, so you don't have prisoners sitting
in the aisles, yeah.
Right. So if you got
a... like a lock bar back there?
Yeah, they may actually make... I was looking at this today. They make prefab benches. With steel benches with a bar for handcuffs. The bar is like in front of the... The bar is in front of the actual bench, and the bench is bolted to the floor.
Is that included in your plans?
Yeah.
I was going to say, you may want to include that.
Yeah, I should have put a note, actually. Let's do a note on here for...
That's what they look at.
Prisoner bench. Yeah, the benches, they're like $3,000, the ones that I found today. Like an 8-foot one is like $3,000. And they bolt to the floor, and they're steel and powder coated, basically.
Is that it?
No, one more thing. The got a quote from Aqua for the 3-inch water service at the park. We would be looking at they would do a 4-inch main extension with a 3-inch meter. That came back at $5,134. So because I was hoping to be able to do this with the park improvement money we had left this year, quite a bit of that has been eaten up by survey costs with the annexation. I don't know if there's other money in the budget or if we could pay for the town park annexation out of building maintenance or some other fund and get this taken care of. I just wanted the board to see what the costs are.
So my thoughts on this is it's good that we have this cost estimate, but until we pull the trigger on the project, it might be jumping the gun a little bit.
Okay.
It's obviously an important component of the project, but I don't think we should spend any money until we make a final decision.
Yeah, okay. The only reason we're doing this is for the spray park.
Yep.
Right.
Don't need it for any other reason.
It's part of the spray park.
Okay. Project. Okay.
Reopen the bids for, I think that's it. I think that's everything
now. Yeah, basically the bids came in double the estimate on the electric installation for West Tennessee Sewer. We only got one contractor that bid it. I think part of it was the holiday weekend. Contractors are notoriously procrastinators, I guess is a good word, on preparing these bids. Actually, we had the same thing happen on another bid that I did on July 4th week. So made a mental note to myself to not have made a mental note to myself to not do a bid ad with a bid opening after a holiday weekend. We're going to rebid for the 21st.
But so I think we have to make a motion to reject the bids. So I'll include that in item F. I'll just combine that. Can I make a motion to reject the bids and to authorize?
Yep, you can do it one more.
For Spray Park, no. I'll do one.
Yeah, because we got to do a finding before we do anything else, especially if we're doing a bond ultimately.
Yep.
You got to get a determination. Do a short one.
Yeah. I'll update the what we just discussed on this drawing and send it out to everybody, including Mr. Mantione. If I got time for one more quick thing, we've talked about it before, the code update. Bob actually asked a question about it last week. I know we have the building and personnel policies on the agenda tonight. Once we get through that, I really would love to see the board take up that code review and changes. I think there are some issues that need to be addressed that were identified by general code. And I think there are, other things out there that really need to be discuss further.
All of the local laws that we've been doing need to be incorporated in that. They're not there right now.
Yeah, they're not in that general code right now. We really need to, I'd love to try to tackle that before the end of the year if we can.
Absolutely.
I know we're coming into budget season, and I know everybody's really busy, but it's really something that's been hanging out there for like a year and a half now.
So for policies, if we make a policy change, the board needs to adopt the policies as recommended?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's not on? I don't believe that's...
No, they are not on here. Just discussion of work session right now is also...
Okay, so after we discuss the policies, we might entertain another motion approving the policy changes, which plows the road for us to take on the code.
Yeah. Joe, I have one policy that I've been looking at a couple different towns for a whistleblower policy. For history, I know I brought this up before, but about 4 years ago, before me and Bob took office, there was an independent audit done, and the town paid for the audit. One of the recommendations was a whistleblower policy. There are different forms of whistleblower policies, so I've been looking at a couple different towns. There is one that I liked, but I wanted to change the name from this other town to Lysander. I haven't had a chance to actually make those changes, so I haven't sent it out yet.
You can present that and look
okay.
at that.
I just wanted to make sure that I let you guys know.
You know, state law has a whistleblower law.
And I know that falls within the boundaries. At one point, I thought it was really important that it's brought up because it was part of the audit. And I know that while we're putting all these policies together, let's just throw in a whistleblower policy as well because it was one of the recommendations. So,
okay.
At least that's my perspective. So,
okay.
All right. So I just want to be clear on where we're going with code review. So how are we going to do this?
So we got a list of comments from General Code a year and a half ago after we adopted our new zoning code that we just need to review with the board. And address the comments and concerns that they had, and then
these are from the public. We got them?
No, from General Code. General, oh. We paid General Code to do an audit of our code.
Okay, right.
And these are the comments that they came back from that audit. We just need to address their comments. It's really sit down at a work session with the code document and review it and compare it to the comments and give them some direction. There's some minor tweaks that we need to make.
It shouldn't take.
No, Karen long. Royce has worked on this. She should be included.
Planning board reviewed their section.
Yeah, we could either do it as a committee. You could Joe could have a committee to do it, or we could do it as a board in its entirety. But it's something that I really would love to get accomplished before the end of the year.
A lot of us, it's just, you know, they're like changing typos, for example.
Yeah.
A lot of it is not, you know, we're going to adopt a new law or we're going to change the laws. We just got to clean up.
Yes. I mean, we do have to do a new law because when the code was adopted, we did not call somehow wind use. Yeah, there was a wind use section, a windmill section that got left out that needs to be. So we got to do a local law to bring that in. Bob mentioned adult entertainment and stuff like that. Our code does not really effectively address that, in my opinion, where those facilities can go. And that should, I think, if we're going to do, I know everybody shied away from it the last time we did an update, but I think it's a good idea to address that. I mean, it just makes it... a sticky situation. When somebody comes in with an application, you have to tell them where they can go, and then it becomes a hot potato, essentially. Right, Tony? That's
San Francisco.
Yeah, I know
the
other
village did it.
Yeah,
there's one parcel that's available for that type of business in the village. Just one.
Yeah.
Well, as long as you make it available, you're fine. But if you exclude it, then you have problems.
Then you have a problem, but you have to think about long and hard about how we're gonna.
That was just an example. The question that I raised, and I sent the, I didn't know if you guys caught it. I read up the paper last week. The town of Batisco is doing all they can to stop the development of a motorsports club because this neighborhood that it's in, you know, a lot of noise, all of that stuff. So it just raised the question, you know, are we comprehensive enough? And so my question to us is, I don't think I know personally enough to be able to review everything that's out there. I sure as heck would like to get the brains and planning to help us and stuff that they've come across. And I only cited adult entertainment or drug paraphernalia type businesses because those are classic examples. But there may be other things. You know, what about a motorsports raceway in our community?
Oh, that would be only allowed on.
I don't know. Throwing out things that I don't want to go through all this work and then find out. Oh my God, we left that out.
Atisco has no zoning, so anything goes there. It's like the Wild West.
Yeah, it's a free for all. You can buy a piece of property and do whatever you want with it. But
you see what happens even with no zoning? They're getting sued because the guy said, "Okay, I want to put a dirt track here," and they stopped him because I don't think they've got a leg to stand on. But they stopped him, and now there's going to be a court battle if the guy wants to proceed with that. But
yeah, so those are good. Those are.
So I guess what I'm throwing back to you, Joe, is how do you want to do this? Do you want to charge a subcommittee to look at this?
Well, I think for the general review of the code, as far as I think, because the board is still a good portion of the board is relatively young, and I don't know how much time. I don't want to speak for the board, but I don't know how much time has been spent reading through the code. It might help us to do a general review as a group, but in those specific areas, maybe assign a subcommittee to look at those specific areas of concern, adult entertainment and...
I know I've seen other towns that have said adult entertainment only in industrial zones. Mm-hmm. I've seen towns that said only in PUDs. I've seen... Those are the most two common.
Yeah.
Most two common.
Usually it's a faraway zone. Away from residential.
PUDs?
Yeah. A lot of PUDs are developed more as industrial commercial/commercial parks than residential.
And, you know, just.
It's not our
the
situation.
The reason we even deal with this.
There's clauses in it has to be like-minded uses in our PUD code. So there's certainly restrictions there. You wouldn't want to put 75 homes next to.
And the other thing you got to remember in terms of what Bob is saying, you're not going to get all the things. You're going to forget something, but the good part is you can change that as you go along.
Yeah.
You
know,
if you need to add something,
yeah.
You change.
Bob, you want to chair that subcommittee?
Well, I don't think I know enough about this, so I just want to make sure. I'll be more than happy to be on it. I would like someone that's on it, like Al or Jack over there.
Has Karen she worked with good people. She might be a good one to.
Yeah, Karen would. Karen, Tony, obviously you are.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Throw a motion on tonight, just establishing a subcommittee.
And you can
review.
You can.
Or we could do that next.
We'll just do that. We'll do it next.
Yeah, let's stick to. I mean, we're adding a whole bunch of other stuff right now, so let's stick where it's at where we're at there. And I'll make a note to put it on the next agenda. Establish subcommittee for.
So you're saying you don't want us to do it as a board? Go over this.
No,
code?
We're gonna do the general review. Yeah, we're gonna do the general review of the code as a board.
Okay. And what you find too is if. If you say, let's pick adult use, you know, we think we need to have that. There's lots of codes out there. If you go to General Code Publisher, they have just about every town in the state.
Yeah, you don't.
In the state. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. Yeah. You can say, you know, pick a couple of them. Okay, this is the one we like the best. And
typically it's, like I said, in towns that I've worked in, it's industrial areas or.
And there's usually language. Schools.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Schools, the schools, churches, yes. Schools and churches,
yeah.
And
parks, all that stuff. But there's some great examples out there. Every town seems to approach it a little differently, but it's all in the same.
Usually, when they were done, the town spent a lot of time because of all those different things. Developing it, you know. So there's as Al said, there's a lot of good ones out there that you can.
It really comes down to geography, because what you do is you look at your map and you craft it around the geography of your municipality. That's where it gets unique. The language is pretty.
Yeah, the language is all.
So the policy committee that you're going to be putting together or announcing at the next board meeting, not tonight. Maybe it might be a nice idea to invite a representative from the village and from the school district because both of these are going to benefit or be affected one way or the other because of this. They
or maybe we invite them into a meeting of the subcommittee rather than having them as participants. But sure. Yeah, invite them in.
Yeah, because I think the village is that's pretty.
They got
restrictive.
Yeah, that's pretty restrictive. They learned the hard way. They there was a history behind that. There was a club that formed at the Four Corners of Baldwinsville that existed for about a year or two. And the village couldn't do anything about it. They were like in shock. So they crafted a pretty ironclad code to address that.
Yeah, it's a.
So maybe we do want to invite them in, and the school district might have some perspective on this as well that we could take advantage of.
Yeah, yeah, just bring them into a subcommittee meeting, absolutely.
Did you have your hand raised, Jack?
No.
Oh, okay.
So that was all I got.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Get out of here. Be safe.
Apologies.
Take care.
Thanks, Al.
So, Tony, you want to brief us? We'll invite Tony. Tony and I have worked on the business plan, business side of the spray park. A lot of some of the concerns that were raised in the last meeting.
Yes, sir.
By Hugh Kimball and Bob and a couple others. And
thank you very much.
He's done a good job in breaking this down for us. Tony, why don't you walk us through this?
So basically, I went back and I listened to the last work session and took notes on what you guys were discussing. So this is just a tentative work plan. We'll try to firm it up. I sat down with our Parks and Splash Pad Committee and we discussed some things. Basically, what you see up here is the initial investment of $500,000, our grand opening July 1st. Operational cost, I broke it down into projected it for 2018, what I'm putting in the 2018 budget, and what we budgeted in for and what was approved for 2017. The spray park staffing, I broke it down to 21, and I'll show you how I got those numbers when we get down further down into it. Water, we're anticipating 15, just for the fact of how new it's going to be. Camillus on their grand opening used 16 and it was one of the hottest summers on record. So we're using 15 just to be on the safe side, rather be high on the water cost than low. Electrical cost, I talked with David on how we get the electric cost. He just does a grand running year round thing. But talking with Al, everything that's going into the splash pad is gonna be low usage. So he didn't anticipate it being that high. So I'll show you how I got to that number. Our general maintenance supplies, you know, trash bags, gloves, cleaning supplies, bleach, disinfectant, stuff like that. We get that stuff on an annual basis up at the park anyways. So what I did is just put $1,000 and just up my budget for 2018 a little bit. You can see where it went up from 2017, it went up to 22. And same with the operational cost, I kept it the same. I don't see that going up, but I put in $1,000 if we end up doing like wristbands, things like that, to run that. What I did is I broke down long-term
wristbands if we're going to charge.
If we go down that road, absolutely. Long-term equipment maintenance, I put $1,000 in there because we just started a capital improvement fund last year in 2017. We put about $9,000 in. But I put $1,000 just to start, just to kind of keep money in that account. Then what I did is I broke down transportation and playground supplies because that money in 2017, if you add those two line items together and add it to the 16, would offset the $21,000 that I was looking at budgeting for staffing for 17 or 15 weeks.
So you're not going to do transportation and playground supplies, is what you're saying?
If we do the splash pad, we would eliminate that, and that would fall into how to offset the cost of the playground program. You know what I'm saying?
Am I making it clear?
All right, so, and then I broke down into a little bit of revenues. Revenue
split. This is great so far, but I have to ask a question, and if you don't mind, I can just jump in. Everything looks right to me. I don't know why you would. If we said as a board we want to put $10,000 aside into a parks maintenance plan, account every year, I was thinking we were going to do that every year. So, shouldn't there be budgeted another $10,000?
That
might spend some of that at the Spring Park, but are we saying...
We were saying we went with not doing the mowers, and we took the money that was budgeted for the mowers and we put it into that to start that account. Mm-hmm. I would like to see $10,000, but it's going to be hard to try to pull.
I agree 100%. But I wanted to see what the board would say. This is Tony's budget, so I wanted to give him an opportunity to present it and defend it. But I have the same opinion that you should always contribute to your capital accounts. I mean, those are the shock absorbers that we've been trying to build up and build into our budgets.
Absolutely.
And I think you need to be consistent with that. And even though this is a great project, this is something that we're excited about. I wouldn't want to see the long term.
And there is wiggle room in there. When we finally sit down at budget time, there's going to be things that we're going to eliminate due process we're going to either take away the playground program or add the splash pad or staff the splash pad. There's going to be things of where we're going to shift from line item to line item, and this number is going to go up.
Well, I know, but if you're going to submit a budget, I guess the budget that you submit to this capital account, whatever we're going to call it, long term maintenance thing.
So you'd rather
would
see
not even be you wouldn't even identify what you were going to spend that money on. We're just going to put $10,000 every year or $5,000, whatever the number the board feels.
And I'm fine with going back and just throwing that number
there. So I kind of got I was involved in this. You may find those funds as Tony continues to present the budget.
Right.
Okay.
That's my argument. Right now I'm putting $1,000 in. That number is going to change as we go through the budget process. And we're going to say, hey, take that money and let's put it into that. So now it might be $3,000 and it might be $5,000. So that line item is going to go up.
Just keep in mind that this, and I think Tony mentioned it, but this plan assumes that there will be charging, that you're going to generate revenue.
Right. This is all based on having staff up there and charging. So when we go breaking down into the staffing operations, we're increasing minimum wage to $10.40 from $9.70. The initial running of this splash pad, of what our numbers that we're crunching here, are for 15 weeks, 110 days. Now, our grand opening is not till July, so we're going to be missing some days. We'll be cut a couple weeks into that. So these are just, if we were to go
a full season,
these numbers are based on a full season. But we're looking at running it for 15 weeks, 110 days. It's all going to be weather permitting. We're looking at running it for operational for 8 hours from 11 to 7. Staffing would be for 9 hours, two shifts at 4 hours and a half. And we would pay for opening, closing, making sure things were opened up, cleaned up, and then closing down and cleaning up at the end. The committee felt that there should be tot time, smaller kids, younger kids, and what we were thinking is, because it's a program system, that we could put and program it to only do ground sprays for about an hour, and that's what we were thinking. And that would be considered our tot time, and we would use signage like that to let people know that the big sprays won't come on until later, these are only ground sprays, and it's technically tot time. Hours of daylight obviously change, it gets darker sooner, obviously we see that now coming into September. So, and it's all weather permitting as well. Operational costs, where the $1,000 would come in, we were thinking just wristbands and first aid supplies. There's probably going to be a little more skin knees up at the park, a little more band-aids, things like that. But our biggest expense is probably going to be identification of letting know who paid to get into the splash pad. There's optional expenses if we want to get into swim diapers, sunscreen, you can see for that. Breaking down into numbers, how I got to $21,000, two staff at 9 hours at minimum wage for 7 days a week for 14 weeks is how I got $18,000, and that's Monday through Sunday. And then I calculated 6 days before Memorial Day and 6 days after, so two staff at 9 hours at minimum wage for 12 days, Saturdays and Sundays only before Memorial Day and Labor Day, gave me the $2,000. And that adding up together gave me around $21,000. That's how I got to that number. Our maintenance plan, I said, we do our maintenance up at the park anyways. We pull trash, we do all that kind of stuff. It would just be our everyday routine. We would just add the spray park to it. And I only budgeted $1,000 for cleaning, trash, gloves, supplies, like I said. Long-term maintenance, talking to the company that we've been talking to, they said as long as we keep it properly winterized in the winter and have it supervised and staffed and making sure kids aren't misusing the equipment, they can see it 20 plus years. My long-term equipment thing is I was thinking $1,000 at minimum aside just for the splash pad, making sure that that fund goes in there. This money will not go back into the general fund. It will stay in that account so that we could use it for things. Is like I said, I broke it down to a three-year plan to change the little mister heads that squirt the water because of hard water and stuff like that are going to corrode them. We're going to want to change those out. And maybe a five-year plan of maybe we get sick of one dumpster or one mister and we want to switch it out to update it to give it a fresh new look or something. So that was put in there just as a thought. A preventative maintenance, vandalism, things like that, property damage, were covered under insurance. Like I said, electrical, it's all low voltage. I averaged about $40 per month for 5 months, gave me my $200. Running it as a year, just so I broke it down so you guys know what we're paying up there. When I talked to David, August 2016 to July 2017, we paid for a year $12,000 for the maintenance building and $3,000 for the park. And I'm believing that with the spray park, it would fall under the park. So that $3,000 probably would go up a little bit. There's no additional coverage of insurance for liability reason, but they will add it to our property insurance if something were to happen to the equipment or something were to happen, that it would be covered under our property insurance. Water budget, like I said, with the equipment that we picked out, it's about 140 gallons per minute. I still put 15, and I put in there that Camilla spent 16 on their grand opening. Income, we were talking $1, all participants, non-walking infants would be free. You know, we're not going to chase somebody down. All of a sudden, the kid miraculously takes his first step at the splash pad. So what? We're going to probably let it go. But we're talking all $1 for everybody that's going inside the fence line would pay $1 and get a wristband. My average was 75 people per day. That's probably saying it's probably going to be a little higher on weekends, a little lower on weekdays. For 110 days, gave me the $8,000. Approximately would cover half of our water usage if we were to charge. Then if we wanted to do lockers, which Al budgeted in the changing room, if I had about $15 a week, at 15 weeks would give me about $225, and we were anticipating the lockers to cost 50 cents to use a locker for a full day.
So what? How does your staffing budget change if you don't charge?
If we don't charge?
Yeah. You're spending $21,000.
Yeah, I would have $21,000 to put somewhere else.
You wouldn't get rid of all your staff.
You need staff to oversee. You need someone there the entire time the place is open to, you know, spot check it, clean it, whatever. So of the but some of that 21 is ticket sales. But some of who's doing the maintenance of the park during the day? Who's watching it? Who's picking up swim diapers? Who's yelling?
Yeah, that would be one of the two staff members. They would be there, okay, so just to oversee wristbands.
I need a number for what you're not going to spend if we don't charge.
Does it cut your staff in half? Because you got one collecting money,
right,
and monitoring the gate, and
right,
one supervising,
okay,
the...
So for $11,000 and change, you can run this park if you don't charge.
Probably even less than that.
Okay, so let's say 10.
Okay.
So there's your...
So, you know, because you're only going to bring in 8, so my recommendation is not to charge and cut your staffing plan in half and just have a fun time out there.
So if you wanted to stick with that budget, though, there goes your, add that to your long-term equipment,
exactly,
maintenance plan, and you're just shifting resources.
Exactly.
Right, and that's where I said that line item would go up. And definitely, you know, this is, my budget's going to be pretty fun when we sit down and talk about it, because I think we can do that. We can shift things around and move things around where we could utilize different...
I think you've done a terrific job here.
Yeah. Very nice, Tony.
It's basically a programmatic decision, do we charge or not? And the beauty of not charging is we not only save half the staff, but we're not even losing that much revenue. You know,
it's
a wash.
And I agree with Bob Gerasi. I said this to you earlier, Tony. I think some of the people that are going to benefit the most from this are maybe people that can't afford, you know, spending a significant amount of money, and I realize it's a dollar, but if they go several times a month, the money does add up. And we're not really bringing in that much money anyway, so to charge a dollar or not
well,
to charge
it's
a dollar.
A family of four, it's $4.
I realize that. Forget, and that adds up.
Nothing
so.
Is right, written in stone.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it used to be that you could drive into Beaver Lake and not pay anything. It's now, what, $5 a car? I mean, the things, after you run a facility for a while, you kind of get a sense. You know, maybe we ought to charge. You know, maybe we, you know, you'll get a sense. But I think off the bat, for the headache of wristbands and, you know, can you walk? No, you can't walk. We're going in free. You know, let's just have fun. If we're going to do this, let's just have fun.
And that's fine. It's just, you know, when we sit down at budget time, when we go to look at my budget, it's already been submitted, for one. So I would like to, you know,
you want
look at well, yeah. If we go down this road, I would like a second chance of looking at it, maybe relocating some money or reallocating it.
But what Joe just said, though, that you just found the $10,000.
I would just make a note on your form that there was support, unanimous support, that, you know, there we could shift resources from if we don't charge. To your equipment reserve account.
Yeah.
And that's for the things that, you know, come up, like, you know, you need to put a new roof on your picnic
shelter.
Or I don't want to have to find $20,000 in one operational budget year because we have this account. Look, it's got $50,000 in it now. We can pay for the roof out of that. That's the beauty of these capital accounts.
That's the shock absorber.
Right.
So your rate doesn't skyrocket.
Yeah, and there's going to be some time I'm going to come to you and ask for a new playground.
Absolutely. But what we don't want to do is this.
That's not going to be this budget, right?
Right. Absolutely. So, yeah, my budget's already been submitted, and that's I just wanted to give you kind of an overview of what we were talking about and kind of bring you guys up to speed of what we've been discussing and what we've been looking at. So,
thank you.
But really when good. Budget time comes in, because it's already been submitted, you know, I would... Maybe I'll bring some new things to the table that weren't presented in the budget that, you know, if we were to flex some things and move some things.
What I want to make sure, you know, only because Bob and I have been in the business our entire lives, what I want to make sure you do, Tony, is not sit there on any given day and say, oh my goodness, I wish I had another person to do this. You know, this, whatever it takes to keep this park bright, cheerful, clean, whatever you need. Yeah, and that's what I want to make sure you don't shortchange yourself.
Absolutely.
We don't want anybody coming the first time and having a bad experience.
Absolutely. Yeah.
One thing, though, and this came up, I think, today, we need to consider. Tony added a football field this year for Pop Warner football. And now that my son's playing, I see it firsthand as far as the impact of that is. I mean, the park now is showcasing two games, the parking this time of year at 5:30. I mean, the place is packed. The areas that I think we looked at expanding parking were those ash trees, those young ash trees are probably
at the south end of the
toward the garage.
Towards the garage, a maintenance barn. There's ash trees down there, and we talked about maybe. Going to be when we cut them down is any given time, but maybe I put in my budget this year to continue the tree project that we restarted this year, and also maybe cut some trees down and remove some trees, and it probably wouldn't hurt to, if we do that with those ash trees, extending the parking lot. And I would ask the board maybe to hold off on millings for a year and use stuff that we already have as a base to our parking lot extension.
Because and we wouldn't talk about paving it next year, because we'd want that base to set and settle. And
I think that's a great
idea. That's a resource that we've got that won't cost us anything. It expands our parking. There are trees that are endangered anyways because of the emerald ash, and might be what was the estimate on additional cars?
When we did this, when I talked to Al in 2014, when I first submitted it, he said probably close to 150 cars we could add to a parking lot extension of doing that, if we did it right.
Excellent.
Gene, offhand, and I realize you might not have the number in front of you, do you have an idea, roughly, like a rough estimate on how much money we may have generated over the last year in selling millings?
Pennies. A couple thousand.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Four grand.
Okay. So we're so by saving the millings and then using a terrace.
Yeah, and I think I still have the original plans.
We could probably buy them very cheaply from
the village. There's millings everywhere. It's like.
But I think I still have the original plans that Al drew up of, you know, the breakdown and what. And now that we did the topo survey, we can actually tell how much we're going to have to raise things up.
We're getting close here.
Excellent. Good job, Tony. Thank you. Thanks, Tony.
Are we still having executive session tonight?
Come over here and just whisper in my ear.
We're recording. Maybe we should.
Yeah.
Just right here. Right now.
Oh, yeah.
We said that we were going to solve
it. Yeah. There will be an executive session tonight. Yeah, sorry, Tony. You got to stick around, buddy. Contractual matter.
Can I just ask a question? Tony, you just reminded me. Did we do something with tree planting?
We are. So let me bring you up to speed on that. So we still have money in our parks project. I know that we didn't do the sewer line connection, but we used some of that money that was designated for that to pay for the topo mapping and the survey, and we still have some money left over. We still have $5,000 set aside for the tree planting. I got in contact with the guy who's on county bid, and with the money that we got set aside, we can probably plant 14 trees, and what we're looking at is sunset maples as you drive up into the park to zigzag across the walking trail that enters into the park. And with that new football field, when these trees change color in the fall, they turn a bright red, and it'd be perfect for atmosphere with that new football field that we put in. That's and awesome. So we can put 14 trees in.
Could
there.
Could you give me the Latin name of that tree? Because I hope it's not a Norway maple.
I can't.
Yes, you can. Ask them.
Call them.
Okay.
Because, you know, you're going to have a fight on your hands with me planting something that's not indigenous, like a Norway maple, unless it's something really special. So, unfortunately, you got a forester sitting at this table, so.
Agreed.
What?
Agreed, and I would comment that you put more than one type of tree. Yeah. In case you have a disease come through.
But I think it's, are we going to plant them this fall?
Yes, that was the goal.
All right. If you can get, you can email me, call me up.
Just call me back and ask for the Latin name.
Okay.
All right.
Species.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but that's the goal. And well,
find a red and white.
If we end up, if
I never heard of this maple you're talking about. Sunset maple.
Yeah, well, that's the easiest way to explain it. With the pond that we're looking at possibly doing, that may affect some of the planting of the trees along the trail coming in. So we may have trees that can go around that pond, too, if we end up doing that.
I'll be more than happy to work with you, Tony.
Absolutely.
And it's called an autumn blaze red maple, also known as the Norway maple.
Yeah,
just kidding.
No. Well, there's a king maple. That one that's all red.
It's not all red. This one is.
Just let's talk.
Yes, absolutely.
That's pretty. That's not a Norway maple.
No. What is it? What's the one?
It's an autumn blaze.
I don't think the Norways turn that red.
Look at that.
That's gorgeous.
I think the Norways do that.
It turns a nice shade of red for the poplar season. So I'm just trying to incorporate
that. Try to find a white one. All right. Good job, Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, policies. We got 5 minutes. Sorry about that. But we got some good work done tonight. Did you incorporate? I'm fine with what was presented in the minute changes that I think we requested.
You're talking about the personal use?
Yeah.
I didn't read it. I fixed it. And I was going to try to spend some time with Gene on a mailbox policy before he told me late September.
Oh, we got one more meeting, so if you want to push this.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Work session's over.
We'll try to get a mailbox.
Is this a legal term? Okay.
Or is that de minimis?
Sweet. That'll come this.
It's usually easy to send us.
Joe, I need your email address. Yep. Or actually, Bill needs your email address.
It's easy. Supervisor, town of Lake Sander. Supervisor, town of Lake Sander.
Well,
yeah, absolutely. I can't imagine. So.
I would just want to show you.